it's Herbert. And you're listening to the About Last Night podcast, you slippery little son of a bitch.
Yo, can you hear me?
Yeah, dude. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Nice, dude. Where are you right now? Are you in the Dakota?
No, I'm in the LA.
Nice, dude.
I am locked down.
I was going to say,
I'm going back to.
You're going back to where?
I'm going back to the cabin in Minnesota the 19th of December, and that's going to be a lot of fun.
Just with you or with the fam?
Take my little guy with me. Nice. My girl will be out there. My sister's coming out for New Year's. I'm gonna be there from like the 19th or 20th all the way through New Year's. So
nice, yeah. Dude.
Get a couple of snowmobiles.
Holy shit. Yeah, Minnesota, I've been there a bunch for stand-up. It's still the a place where I feel like I haven't experienced I didn't know snowmobiling was even a Minnesota thing. You guys probably have dog sleds, right?
No dog sleds. Not that I know. I'm sure there are, but I don't do that.
Just the way that you scoffed off that suggestion. I'm now going to start a dog sled business just so that that type of reaction doesn't come my way again. Cause that was very disheartening.
Have you dog sledded before?
Never. And this is why I feel like it, I feel like it would be the thing to do. I feel like Alaska is probably cornered the market on that, but like, why should they be the only ones?
Yeah. Believe it or not. No, I've done it. I've done it before. Last year I did it up in Northern Montreal, Quebec. And it was a lot of fun, but I mean, I don't want to take care of 15, huskies.
No.
As much as I love huskies and I love dogs, I'm not going to take care. I don't know how to train them.
Yeah, it seems like training a dog sled dog is probably, next to like porn fluffer, is probably one of the most tedious jobs, if not the. has your lockdown been, productive?
This is going to be a fun interview.
This is, yeah.
What's
yeah.
that?
Has your lockdown been productive? First of all, thanks for doing this. Big fan for ages. You, your IMDb is filled with you. You've had the kind of career, and not to get all Katie Couric on you, but like you've really done something for everybody. Like you're in that like The Rock level of like you've got something for everybody. You got the rom coms. You got the fun like dramedy network shows. Like now this movie that you wrote and directed, right?
Yeah. It's been an interesting career. I do like to mix it up as much as I can. I guess from the beginning they try to put you in a box and you spend half your career just trying to fight your way out of that box and prove no, I'm not that, I'm this, I can do this too. And so that's been a lot of what I've done, but I love doing different things. This was so fun about being able to do movies for, I get to make movies, man. I'm just so lucky to be able to do that. And if I get a chance to make a movie about, a kid whose dog speaks to him, or if I get to make a movie about a guy, I just finished a movie in Mexico I'm about done with it, or three more days here in LA, about a guy who gets in this car accident, wakes up in this hospital, doesn't remember anything, and realizes this Mexican mafia is trying to get information from him because he stole a bunch of money. And it's this battle to get out of this, so it's like, I get to play make believe, and I get to do all kinds of different stuff, and it's very fun.
Did you know that when you took second place to Ashton Kutcher in I think it was who's got the best balls or something? What was the contest?
First of all, Adam Kutcher took second to me.
Adam Kutcher, is that what you just called him? I feel like that was
First of all, Adam, did I say Adam? I might have.
That's my name. I thought you just said, wait.
I had a vodka before I got on this thing. So if I slur my words, that's
wait, I thought you said, I think you said, first of all, Adam, comma, Kutcher.
Right.
But the way it came together, I thought you were calling me Adam Kutcher, which then also sounded like some weird, you know.
But the slam. Truth is, back then he was Chris Kuchar. Back then it was Chris Kuchar, and then he changed it to Ashton. But no, I actually won that thing. It was the most ridiculous thing I've ever done. It's
you
like,
did win it. He took second to you.
I won the thing, man. But the problem is I took second after that because he went on and did all kinds of stuff. He went on and did like a
whatever
Klein thing, that 70s show, and everything else. So I struggled for several years. I'm like, but I won the IMTA. I thought it was a big deal, but it really wasn't. But you know, it was a funny sort of change of positions after that actual Zoolander like experience.
Was it really? I was just going to ask
straight up, man. Yeah, it was crazy. We walked around. I mean, there's video online with this. It's. I'm not proud of it. I had some low cut. I was talked into putting some low cut like Gucci thing on that was like down on my belly button, super tight with matching navy blue pants, super tight. What? And they're like, "Oh my God, you're going to be the belle of the ball." I was like, "Okay, I'm straight out of North Dakota." I was like, "All right, I'll put it on." And I look at it now. I was like, "What the fuck was I thinking?"
But dude, also, I mean, it's also the whole modeling world to me is so bonkers. Like the closest thing I used to do when I was fresh out of college was still playing Wolverine at Universal Studios, fucking scraping by, had just quit a restaurant job that I was only at for 2 days because the head chef gave me a panic attack because I wasn't cutting the butter squares like in the right shape. So I was like, anything, just truly in that I need to do anything to make money. And I did something for a few months called fit modeling, where basically it was like from my size, like downtown, I go downtown and put on jeans for these guys and they be like, turn around. And I was like the certain size for whatever. And they just want to see how their product looked on you. And I think I was with a company called Rage Models, which definitely sounds like they're trying to like they've definitely molested kid. Like this agency is, I don't know if they're still around, but like, it was just, I remember I went, their office was like way deep in the valley and it was always tucked away behind like a Cheesecake Factory and like a Best Buy that had been shut down for months. And it was like $75 for 5 hours to wear jeans for like, you know, rich Italian guys. So you had a similar experience.
I did exactly that. That's why I cannot believe that, you know, it. After I win this thing, I think I'm going to go on and be a big deal. And I wasn't. It took 5 years to get anything after that.
Oh, wow.
I went to Milan, which is like, you know, this is where they do all the fashion stuff. I went there thinking I was going to do all this modeling stuff. I was a terrible, terrible model. I was bad at it.
How are you never bad? How can you be bad? Like your look was bad?
I just was not. I was never comfortable like in front of a camera taking photos. I just couldn't. I just never felt comfortable. So as a side job, while I was in Milan, not making any money doing what I went there to do, I took a job as a fit model for Prada. It sounds like a big deal, but it was not. It was the most humiliating job you ever had because you sit back in this room all day waiting for buyers to come in. They're like, okay, so-and-so's coming in from whatever store, come out. And so you got to put the clothes on, you walk out there. You just feel like a trained chimp.
Yeah.
And that's really what I felt like. And I was like, wow, this is what I've become. I was going to go to dental school. And here, you know.
Now Rodrigo's telling me that my thighs don't look good in some Calvin Klein's. Yeah, like, this is not how I pictured my Hollywood dream to pan out.
There's nobody there, but there's somebody there, and I see you. Hey guys, comedian Adam Ray here. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. I hope you're enjoying the episode, and I hope you're doing okay. It's a crazy, crazy time right now, and if you're a little uneasy, I get that, and I've also got the answer. Koi CBD. Say it with me. Koi CBD. Feels good, and it does feel good because I use all their products. I've been fucking with the fellas at Koi CBD since my circumcision, and I'll tell you this much. They're the best in the game, okay? Gummies, bath bombs, tinctures, joints, creams, oils. They got stuff for pets. Koi CBD has been giving the people what they need to feel better, to mellow out, to go to sleep right, to take away the aches and pains with the creams and oils. The bath bombs make bathing just the best thing ever. You get a little radiation high from the balms. I don't know what's in it, but fucking goodness and just all sorts of... It's amazing, okay? It feels like drugs. And it's not, because it's CBD. So if you want to get these amazing products, and I know you do, because they got the Adam Ray stamp of approval, go to KoiCBD.com and put in the code ALN15 to get 15% off your first order. KoiCBD.com, the promo code ALN15 to get 15% off your first order. Do it today and start living and feeling the right way. And now back to the episode.
Wait, so is there now, if have you had, even with that amount of modeling experience, and we will shift gears, I promise, but do you have the same way that, like, you know, as a stand-up, I get young comics that'll hit me up asking, how do I get, you know, they're 3 months in and they're just impatient and they want to know how to, what hoops they can jump through quicker to get on the fast track. Yeah. Did you have that coming up? Like once you kind of transitioned and really started to find success in acting, did you, having the amount of modeling experience under your belt, did you have people being like, like, I don't know, a parent being like, you know, my son is getting into fit modeling. Do you have any tidbits for him? Like, did you have any of that?
Well, I mean, yes. And you still get that. I mean, I still get a lot of people who want to get into the business, and, you know, they've wanted to do it since they were kids, and I never discourage it. But at the same time, I'm like, there's no fast track. You know, there's a million different ways to get there, but you got to hit the streets, man. As you know, you got to hit the streets and you got to grind it. And that's what I did, because I mostly had no other choice. After, I was going to be a dentist. I got my degree in biology. I was going to go on and I told my mom I was going to go to California to try to go to USC or UCSF or one of these good dental schools. And the whole time I knew that I wanted to try to do this, but I didn't really know how. And, you know, you just got to, like, I mean, dude, I could go on and on about the embarrassing moments of just trying to make it in this town and all the rejection. I mean, it's just rejection. And it's just, you got to have a very thick skin. You got to be able to, like, do the work. And I just tell people, you got to get in class. You got to get up in front of a group of people and not be afraid. And I think as a guy who does stand up, you understand that. I don't know how you do that. I could never get up, and I've done some stuff where I felt like I was fearless, but I could never do stand up. I'd just be terrified of that.
Wow. Yeah. That was something that you never, because to me, which is weird, like standing, like doing modeling or walking a catwalk or just having that many people taking pictures is, I don't know. Did you walk a catwalk? I feel like you have to at some point, right?
Yeah, I did. I think I did one or two shows there, but it was just, I was stiff. You got to understand, I grew up in the suburbs of Minot, North Dakota, and there's no modeling, you know, industry there. There's no training for anything like that. So it was uncomfortable in the beginning, but I knew that, and that was not my means to getting to where I am now. It was just a means to try to do something to make some, you don't know until you go through it. After doing it for a couple of months, this is not what I want.
Did you have anybody in North Dakota? Because if you're a hot guy in North Dakota, I'm going to venture to assume you stand out a little bit. Yeah. I don't know what the fellas look like in Dakota. Are we getting lots of Josh doppelgangers? Or is it like, how many other JDs are walking around with the same type of swagger and jawline that you've got right now in North Dakota?
Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty. I haven't looked. I haven't done any recon on that.
Yeah, but I will. So you start getting into the modeling thing. Did you have, like, I don't know, any family members tied to the business or anyone you knew that even got you? How'd you get the bug for even Hollywood? Was it like watching a show? Did you see some movie and you're like,
I just think, you know what it was? That's a really good question. I was, I'd moved to Northern California first. I was living in this town called Rohnert Park, which is between Petaluma and Santa Rosa. I don't know if you've ever been up that far.
Oh, yeah.
I was working in a Gap. They wouldn't let me out front in the front of the house to sell clothes because I didn't dress well enough. So I was like, they put me in the back, and I would unpack the boxes that came, the crates that came in, and I would fold them up and I'd put them there so that when they run out of size, you know, 32, 37s, they would come back and I would have them all ready for them.
An important job.
And I remember it was right around the time, and I can't even believe I'm admitting this, but it's the truth. And I love this dude. I've never met him, but I love him. it was right around the time Legends of the Fall came out. I was like, Brad Pitt is the coolest motherfucker I've ever seen.
Yeah, dude.
And that was when I was like, I want to be like that guy. And that's when I kind of got the bug. I mean, I had it going out there to begin with. That's why I was in California in the first place. But that's when I was like, you know what? I'm going to go for it. And, you know, all this other stuff happened after that. And like, it's cut to 7 years later and I'm getting my first audition for something, which went terribly. But, you know, that, I think that was what really sort of, you know, I just always liked that dude's style. I like the way he operates. I think he seems like a good dude. I like his work. You know, and that's kind of what, and also, you know, guys like Bill Murray and guys like Jack Lemmon and guys like Jack Nicholson, you know,
wow.
Not to say that I'm anything near that, but those are the guys that I really, after I really started training and looking at it and working on it, that's what I tried to emulate, you know, and the fearlessness that those guys have.
That's awesome. Well, those are all great guys to try to, you know, emulate and aspire to be like, So did you have any, you said that first audition 7 years later after, which just went terribly. What was it for? Do you remember?
Oh, God. So I'm now living in Los Angeles. I had a girlfriend in San Francisco. We broke up that day. I packed my Ford Taurus up and drove to LA. I had some buddies who were living there. One of my buddies who actually I play in this movie, believe it or not, Bob Schwartz. he was living
Jew?
Jewish? No, he's not Jewish.
For real?
No.
See, Adam Ray, I'm a Jew. Ray is not a Jewish last name, and that was a joke. Bob Schwartz is not a Jew. Do you know there were four different Bob Schwartzes at Temple Beth Am in Seattle where I went as a child? Are you serious? Uh-oh, you're freezing on me.
Nah, he might be back. I don't know. I've never really, but I shack up on their couch for like, and I'm broke as a joke. I had nothing. I was depressed. I had these migrants going out here, man. I don't, you know, I came out here to do something. I just don't, I'm directionless. I don't know where I'm at. I don't know what I'm going to do. And one of the guys that was living, there's like five of us living in a 2-bedroom apartment right off of Franklin and Gower. And, Jim Vitlatchel, this kid who was working for, he was working in the mailroom at an agency, Don Buchwald and Associates at the time.
That's my first one. Yeah.
Calls me up, knows that I'm like broke. Yeah. Calls me up and says, hey, so the guy that I work with in this mailroom is sick today. Do you want to come in? I'll pay you cash. I was like, yeah. So I go in and, I start distributing photos for whatever show is, you know, casting for whatever part. And one of the agents asked me if I was an actor. And I said, yeah. And I hadn't ever taken a class. I didn't have any experience. I didn't even know. And so they start, he's like, well, I'd like to start sending you out. I was like, okay. And he goes, but we're not going to represent you. We're just going to what we call hip pocket you. They hip pocketed me and they started sending me out to see what happened. So I had several auditions and I'll never forget it. This audition was on a Saturday and it was for Ryan something year one. It was like back in it would have been like 97 or 8. Mm. And so and they hadn't gone well to that point, but this one went exceptionally bad. It was supposed to be bench pressing something and doing the scene. I just had no idea how to prep for a scene. I didn't know anything. I hadn't had no training. I had no business even going to an audition. And so I go back to the house that day. Don't say anything. Jim goes back to work Monday, comes back after work on Monday and says, so how'd that audition go on Saturday? I go, pretty good. He's like, apparently not. if you don't do well in this one you have coming up, they're probably not going to send you out anymore. I was like, oh no. And I knew at this point I wanted to do it, but I hadn't really given it the respect that it deserved
right.
for the work because I didn't right. know. And so at that point I went in and I actually got a call back on that next one. And then I started making a little bit of headway and I really started working at it and studying and it's been something I've done ever since. You know, I don't take this business or this job for granted ever. I take every single job very seriously. And that was kind of the tipping point for me. I felt like I wanted to hide under the couch. And he goes, apparently not. They're not going to send you out anymore. And it was that moment that sort of clicked. And I started having more, you know, it was still baby steps for a long time, but that's when I really started making some headway.
That's awesome. It's interesting how you kind of do, unfortunately, need, you know, a rock bottom, if you will. And I don't know if that's truly a rock bottom moment, but something where somebody that you are looking up to in some fashion of what you're trying to achieve that is just being so blunt with you. And then it's, you know, you thank goodness you had him to be like, fucking, oh, you thought it was great? Yeah. Were you doing it in the shower to nobody? Because there were people at the thing that you just did, and they, you know, whatever it is, you need that outside voice to kind of like actually go, oh, wow. Because, you know, parents, friends, they're going to be supportive up to a point, right? Like, I'm sure they're like, just fucking, you can't do no wrong. And you're like, ate shit on that. And they're like, nah, it's probably just in your head. But you need that person that's going to break it down. And you know, not everyone,
for sure,
not everyone takes that and spins it into fuel to the fire. So, that's a good learning lesson for anyone trying to go after.
Yeah, and that's one of many examples, by the way. I mean, this business, I mean, you might be able to relate to this, but for me, even now, it's mostly rejection. You have to have a thick skin. You got to develop it, or you'll fall by the wayside. And also, I believe you can't have a plan B. You can't have a net, because if you have that net or you have a plan B, you're probably going to take that at some point. For me, even now, like, I have to keep pushing. I have to keep hustling, or I don't know what else I'm going to do, because I have to, you know, it's just the, or work, or however you want to define it.
Yeah, it's you can't have a net unless you have Annette Bening in your back pocket, and she wants to produce everything that you want to make with Warren Beatty. And your plan B is maybe
that was pretty clever, Adam.
Hey, you know, dude, I had that actually.
You can't have Annette, but you can have Annette Bening.
I actually work for AnnetteBening.com, and she's trying to push these t-shirts hard during the pandemic that basically say
good.
You can't have Annette ... unless it's Bening. And it's like, I don't know. I don't get it, but I fucking know her kids. So I'm trying to help them. No, that's not true at all. But do you think that there's something to be said about coming from North Dakota, not having, being a fish out of water and not having any true, like, going in blind, like, ignorance is bliss in trying to get going in this? Like, I mean, I don't know if the Genie in the Bottle music video, that was one of your first gigs. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was one of my first gigs.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that was like a cast off a audition, or if they saw you at a Starbucks and was like, that guy beat fucking Adam Kutcher. Like, let's fucking like put him in. He's probably could carry his own in a music video. 'Cause, by the way, people need to understand that music video, like, some of the stories that are told in some of these and the acting that is still required isn't just like stand there and look hot, which is, you know, can be a part of it, but it's like you still have to show up and add to the whole video. You know, you see these people that are in them, if it's bad, it does take away and can maybe even affect the song. But how did that happen?
Right. How the Genie in a Bottle thing happened?
Yeah.
So I was there to audition for, they said, Christina Aguilera. This is when she was first coming up. I think this was her first hit, actually.
Fuck yeah.
This girl, Christina Aguilera, I think I'd heard of her at the time. I remember the audition like it was yesterday still. I went in, she came in. I was like, whoa, that's her. I guess they wanted to see what kind of chemistry we had. So I tried to talk her up a little bit. She was just sort of aloof and it's like, this isn't going well, but it went well enough to become the guy's friend. So I didn't get the guy, but I got the guy's friend.
Right.
So I wasn't the lead, but I was the guy's friend in it. And I was, if you watch the video, I'm literally, it's like that and I'm gone. I'm jumping over some kind of a fence or something, but I remember the set. I remember being, oh my God, there's craft service here. What's all this free food? I remember Ron Fair, who became a friend afterwards. He was like the big music producer. He had this hat on and he was the guy. And he became a friend of mine because he was a friend of my ex heard. And so it was, you know, you're in this business long enough, it becomes a pretty small circle.
Right.
But that particular job. Oh, and by the way, the guy that did get the job that I was there for found out was fucking my old girlfriend while we were dating. So what? There you go.
Dude, it really is a small circle. Yeah. Yeah, that's.
I was like, wait, is this the guy that beat me in the Christina Aguilera fit? That's the guy that, you know, so yeah, I don't know if that's something we can delete from this audition, but that's another true story. So this is maybe why I remember this so well, is because it was fairly traumatic in retrospect.
Yeah, dude, sorry for bringing that up. Do you want to talk about well, let's shift gears. Let's talk about when the vaccine's coming. Let's shift gears. Do you think movies, obviously, okay, so music video, I don't know how much, do you have side jobs before you're really getting going? Like the modeling thing, obviously, and then like, did you have to, like I said, I was working at Universal Studios and then a restaurant for a little bit. Did you deliver groceries? Did you like, you know, sell knives door to door? Like, did you ever have to do anything like that? Or was it like, you know, a couple things got going, you found odd jobs in the business, and then, you know.
No, I've worked so many, terrible jobs coming through. I mean, I was, before I moved to LA, I was working in an Ace Hardware.
Yes.
Distribution plant. It was like an overnight job from 6 PM to, or 10 PM to 6 AM. Breaking down boxes and putting them into these containers so that the shoppers could fill the orders for whatever hardware store in the region.
Oh my God.
That was maybe the worst. I worked construction. I worked for this company that would go in. There was a mandate back in the late 90s for California. Any gas station that had a tank that was in the ground for more than like 30 years or something, they all had to be pulled out, and they had to replace them with these double lined tanks so that they weren't leaking fuel into the ground. So I had to go in and be the guy that would take these old tanks out and dig out all the soil that was soaked with old gasoline. It was probably the most unhealthy job I ever had. That was something I did in North. I worked in Northern California up in Napa for years, just construction. That's where I learned how to operate, you know, backhoes and excavators and stuff like that. You know, back room at the Gap, like I told you, restaurants, yeah. Just, you know, I did what I had to do to just make some money.
Dude, so you're a true man's man. I mean, you said construction and I think you said backhoes. I don't know what the fuck that is, but that sounded
like
something.
You know what a backhoe is?
It's a backhoe. Is it like a...
A backhoe is like a, you know, the tractors that they got the big wheels in the back, they got littles in the front, and they got the big front end loader, and on the backside, they've got the scooper.
Oh, yeah. So
that's called a backhoe. You're thinking it's one of those groupies that was backstage at one of your shows.
Yeah. We call those super fans. Yeah. Oh, cool. That's so funny. Did you ever have a moment in the grind where you were just like, you know, I think everyone has talked about at some point, Lisa Kudrow famously, right, was getting ready to quit. And then got, you know, I think it was after she got fired from Frasier, and then, you know, Friends comes along. Like, did you have a moment where it was like, man, if I get a call back for one more Pizza Hut commercial and I don't get it, I'm fucking out of here. Like, did you have any sort of like ultimatum with yourself, or have you always been self-assured and been like, dude, just take a look into those sweet JD eyes.
No.
Get some confidence and see what the world is going to see. Did you talk to yourself?
How do I answer that? So yes, I mean, there were a lot of like moments when I was like, what am I doing? Do you have what it takes? Can you, for me, the hardest part about, and I still hate it when I got to go audition for something, it's the hardest part of getting any job is actually getting the job.
Yeah.
Doing it is the fun part because you're there on set. You get to immerse yourself in whatever environment you're going to be shooting it in. You get to work with the other actors, and that's the fun part. It's the getting the job. And I remember the auditioning was just so. I could never. If I could get past like that racing heartbeat or the sweats or not being able to catch. Like, I had real like panic attacks in a lot of these early auditions because I just couldn't get myself calm enough to give the performance that I needed to give. And that was part of the, that was part of why I had so much, you know, empathy for these people who were coming into audition for my movies. I was in their spot, so I knew, and I was now the guy who was like casting. But I remember there was one moment, my very first job that I got as an actor was for this movie. Please don't watch it because it's terrible. The movie's not terrible. I'm terrible in it. It was a student film based on an Oscar Wilde, The Picture of Dorian Gray, but it was sort of a contemporary version of it. And there was a moment when I had to lose it. I had to like fucking lose my mind in a scene. And I did. And it was the first time I'd ever done it in an audition. I was like, and I could see the look in their eyes. It's like, he's the guy. And I knew right there that I got the job. And I was like, I just broke through some fear that I've been having through this stuff, because I had this thing like, they're all going to think I'm a joke back home. What am I doing in this audition? I'm a fraud. I'm a fake. What am I doing? I'm not an actor. What am I trying? But I'd been working at it long enough to now know that I needed to go really prep for these auditions and do my homework and all the things you got to do. And I finally was able to relax enough to just let it go. And that was the moment I got my first job. And after that, I got all my children because I got that job. And after I got all my children, I was literally, and after that one moment, I knew that I had to, whatever job I had to be fearless and not be afraid of what I looked like or what people thought of me. And I went on to do all my children, and I brought that same idea with me. I ended up getting nominated for an Emmy my first year on this, on all my children.
Yeah.
I won the Emmy my second year. And then I got nominated 30, and I was like, people have no idea. I'm like, I still felt like a total, I still feel like a fraud sometimes, but like it's that whole time I felt like what, like something happened where, and then I started to feel like maybe I can do actually do this, but it was that one moment that I just like didn't care anymore. Maybe it was the moment I was ready to give up, and I was like, fuck it, whatever happens, happens. And I brought that with me to all my children, and they're like, whoa, this guy's a little nuts, but we like it. And that was kind of the beginning. It was all my children, then Las Vegas. Then I got a couple movies. I got like Ted Hamilton and Transformers. And then it sort of started to work. But having said all that, it's still every, you know, this job, this business, it can go as fast as it comes. And that's why I don't take any of it for granted. Every job is, you know, my last job.
Is being on a soap, first of all, that was beautiful. Is being on a soap as... It looks fun. I've had two buddies on soaps. They seem like it was, they always spoke highly about it. Some of the storylines, you know, one of them was on Passions and he's like, yeah, today I think I'm, you know, reviving. I'm like a doctor who's reviving like a hermaphrodite witch and then reuniting her with like her estranged son, who's actually her grandpa. I'm obviously fucking paraphrasing that storyline. I don't think that was
ever. But I think that happened on Young and the Restless in 87.
Yeah. They were ahead of their time with their storylines. But is there, you know, I auditioned, I think, for two soaps, and the guy thought I was, I'm from Seattle. The guy thought I was from New York, and I was in his office. It wasn't a casting couch situation, but he was definitely giving off some interesting vibes. And I was like, maybe the second thing I'd been in on. After my you know, fit modeling career fucking took a dive. And so I'm in this office and the guy's like, so what part of New York are you from? And I was like, you know, but you know, the Brooklyn side, you know, I just lied and went along with it. And he's like, what part of Brooklyn? And I was, he's like, and I knew one area called Borum Hill because I had lived there for like 3 months with a girl in the summer before I moved back to LA. And so I was like, Borum Hill on the next to the deli shop. And he was like, the deli shop? And I was like, the one with the, you know, everybody goes there. And
then Brahmi sandwiches.
Yeah, they got the sandwiches and people go in and they ask for sandwiches and they have them because it's a deli. And then he named some place and I was like, yeah. And I didn't get it, but it seemed, seeing like all, I don't know, man, like the sets and just being on the sound stages for it, like it seemed like a sweet, like, I don't know, isn't it like the hours are good too, right? Like,
well, it's it's a different world. The whole soap world is a completely different world. First of all, it's the best possible thing that could happen to me because I needed that training, and it was like boot camp. The amount of words you got to learn every day, you know, you understand where your light is, you understand media on a smaller scale. Everything is a little bit smaller scale, but the workload is intense.
Yeah.
And I was willing to do the work. I was willing because I was all about just trying to prove myself. I just wanted to keep the job.
Yep.
And I would sit there every night working. And I actually, my first audition was, remember Passions?
Yes. Yeah, that's the one Passions. I mentioned that my buddy was on. Yeah.
Yeah. I went in an audition for Passions. Sorry, I'm moving around here. Good but time. I'll never forget, I had a screen test, and it was a big deal because I was close to getting my first acting job. And I had to go like walk front of stage to like pour myself this glass of whiskey because I was part of the scene. I had to do it with this girl, and she was behind me. And I was so nervous that I would go and I was trying to pour this glass of whiskey, and my hands were shaking. And I was like, oh God, I'm not going to get this because look at me, I'm just fucking shaking. I can't even pour a glass of whiskey. I wasn't ready. I hadn't busted through.
All right.
But then I got, you know, all my children. But the thing about the soaps too is that I knew my mom watched Young and the Restless my whole life. I mean, as early back as I can remember, I remember being on my grandparents' farm in North Dakota, out near Esmond, North Dakota, and Young and the Restless was on. And my mom still watches that to this day. And so through the years, I watched these guys do this, and I knew like the sort of way they did it. That's part of why I went in and going, okay, I know what they're expecting from me. I need it. If I'm going to try to do this and do it well and make a name for myself, I got to do something different. So I would try stuff there that was so against what was conventional.
Like what, like a Jamaican accent? Like how would you step out? And like, why were you? No,
well, I mean, Jesus, I could just go on and on. But I mean, there was like, I would come in, I would improvise. You just don't improvise on those shows because they're shooting 60 pages a day. I would try stuff. I'd like start laughing in a scene when I wasn't supposed to. It was just like, I just try stuff. And again, it was mostly out of fear of, I was like, I'm going to either sink or I'm going to swim.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try things and I'm going to stand out. However, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do it. And that's really what my thing was. You know, I remember I had to be drunk in the scene, walking onto the set, and I hadn't had all the training I needed. I was still learning this thing. So I just started spinning around and around and around and around outside, like behind the door before I walked in on the set. And I walked in there like just hammered. It felt like I was hammered.
Whoa.
And I remember the director going, why don't you just act like you're drunk? And I didn't know how to act like I was drunk. I had to actually work myself into a place where I really felt drunk. And I still do that kind of stuff because I have to. I have to like really truly like feel it all through my body, or else I just feel like I'm just faking it.
Dude, that's amazing. Those types of little tricks, man, are so cool to hear from actors like yourself, because it's like people just assume that you should, if you are a great actor like yourself, that you should just, yeah, you can just turn that on and just be and feel drunk. And it's like you said, man, to you know, absorb the full authenticity of that, like it's obviously going to be better if you can get yourself to a point to where you're, you know, feeling it as much as you can without actually...
Yeah.
Unless
you're super
method.
Some people can just turn it on like that. I've never been that guy. I have to, and that's why I really, it's a physical sort of, especially if it's a physical movie or if I'm in a, like an altered state or something, I got to work myself into that state.
Who taught you the spinning move? Was that a Susan Lucci tip or who?
No, I just made it up I made everything up on the fly, man. I was just trying to not fuck up.
Was she All My Children?
She was All My Children. Yeah.
Wow, dude, was that? I mean, let's be
she
honest.
She didn't like me very. She didn't like me very well at first because I was not, you know,
by the book.
Yeah, I think I pissed her off a lot.
Well, dude, let's be honest. She was kind of like, you know, let's say I don't know Jerry West, Rick Barry, and you're coming in, Michael Jordan, Dr. J.
Wow. Well,
you know, John Stockton, you're doing some like new things at that the league hasn't seen. You're improvising, you're spinning backstage.
Maybe. I mean, that might have been it, but, and I'm not saying she wasn't mean. She was always she's like the consummate professional, but I could tell that I really annoyed her because I would. Did you see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Love it.
When DiCaprio was doing that shit, for the scene, he kept forgetting his line. He was working on it the night before he was practicing. That's kind of, I was like, damn. I know he was making fun of actors to do that, but I was like, dude, that's me.
No way. That's awesome.
And I would get so mad because I was so competitive growing up and I had this temper when I was younger. I've been working on it. It's not nothing like it was. And I would get, and I wouldn't get mad at anybody, but I would just beat myself up so hard that if I forgot my lines, I would start getting in my head. I'd forget it again. And it would just become this uncomfortable thing on set. And it has happened a few times in my career. And I went in that scene in particular, I was like, wow, that was me several times.
To a T. That's amazing. Yo, kind of dope too, that you said you wanted to follow in Brad Pitt's, you know, footsteps. And wasn't he also like a soap guy?
I think he was for a minute.
All right.
I don't think I was on there for 3 years. I think he did like little guest spots here and there, and then he just blew up. But
it would have been great if he came into the gap at one point, into the back, and he was like, hey, do you got a size 37, 35? And you're like, Mr. Pitt. And he's like, that's right. And he's like, and just kidding about that size. You know, I'm a 22, 24. And you're like, yeah, I know.
and by the way, I'm just kidding about the Gap. I wouldn't buy shit at the Gap.
Yeah, I could just feel in this mall somewhere that somebody was fantasizing about following in my footsteps. So I thought I'd come by to check in and see how the dream was going. Did your experience? Okay, obviously you said it's fascinating to me, man. The soap world, because I also know from buddies that have done it that you can get stuck in it, right? And to actually break out and have a career like you've had after isn't guaranteed, right?
No. No, and I knew that. And I also, this is part of what I knew watching, you know, for, you know, so Young and the Restless for all those years. Mom always had it on. So I know, like, God, this guy's been on this show forever. And by the way, it's not a bad gig. It's a pretty great gig. But I knew that I wanted to go off. I knew that if I stayed longer than 3 years, I was going to be there forever. Because they did offer me a nice contract to stay. And I was like, and this is coming from a kid who had nothing. I grew up without a lot of money.
Oh, really?
And so this is the first, I'm living in New York City. I'm making money for the first time. You know, and it was
nothing better than making money and probably good money and living in New York and you're young, right? I mean, that's kind of the only time you want to maybe be living there.
I saw a lot of sunrises, just put it that way. And it wasn't because I was up early training.
Unbelievable, man.
But yeah, it was one of those things where I knew that I needed to, I loved it. It was a great learning experience, but I had to go after those first 3 years. Otherwise I would have been there, which again, wouldn't have been a bad thing, but it wasn't what I wanted.
Did you feel like, I don't know, extra pressure then coming out to LA? Cause then you, what, then moved from New York to LA. Yeah. To really go gung ho.
I actually got the job in LA and had to move to New York for those 3 years.
Gotcha.
And then moved back, you know, beat the streets again for another year and a half. And then I got Las Vegas. And
you guys shot that in Vegas, right?
No, we shot that in LA.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. We just built a giant set over on the sound stages in, Culver Studios.
That show ruled. Khan to me is like one of those guys that people sleep on, and I can't only imagine the stories, the wisdom, the fucking what it's even like to look across from that guy in a scene. I mean, do you have any just JC, JD fucking tales from the strip?
Oh God, I've got so many. He was truly, he'll go down as the guy that taught me more than anybody about not only acting, but about, you know, the business. And by the way, not just what to do, but what not to do. And he would be the first one to say, he's like, don't fucking follow in my footsteps, but here, come here. And every time we do a scene and he didn't think I was doing it right, he'd be like, and I always knew it. He's like, Josh, come here for a second. I'm like, oh shit, here we go. So he'd take me aside and be like, you need to let loose. You need to like do this or that. And I was like, okay. But I took it because this is Sonny Corleone. This guy's done everything in this business. And I still keep in touch with that guy. And that's, I love awesome. Him. He's one of those guys that just, he's a purist. You know, he acts before he thinks. He does nothing. You know, you don't have to worry about him like mincing words about anything. And I love that about that. I like that about anybody who's got the balls to live their life that way. But yeah, there's some gems, man. I remember my first date with I was going on my first date with Fergie back in 2004.
Yeah.
I was like, Jimmy, I'm going on a date with this girl. I like her. You know, what do I do? He's like, come here. First of all, he goes, take her to this restaurant. But before you do that, you got to jerk off first before you go to the restaurant.
You're like, it's only an Olive Garden. You're like, no.
He tells me to spank it before I go on the date because that'll relax me. So I won't be all horned up at the date.
Dude, that is fucking phenomenal advice. By the way, you're probably like thinking he's maybe going to give you some like really big, you know, no. Like, dude, here's the thing. Like, pick her up. Make sure you got, like, find out what type of music she's into. Maybe have that song playing in the car when you pick her up. He's like, yeah. No, dude, just find a dark corner in your house, turn on the lights so you can really hear yourself and just empty the tank. Oh, my God, dude. That's fucking amazing. Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Hope you're enjoying this episode. Obviously, it's a very difficult time for everyone right now. We're all challenged in finding a day-to-day routine that makes our lives consistent and awesome. And if there's something that's interfering with your happiness right now or preventing you from achieving your goals, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. BetterHelp is a professional counseling service online, private, and it's so convenient. I've used it for a little bit now. It's truly the only way that I've found to help get my own issues dealt with on my own time, at my own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your licensed professional counselor right now. They're specialized in depression, anger, stress, anxiety, family conflicts, LGBT matters, grief or relationships, sleeping, which I have a lot of trouble with, trauma, self-esteem. Anything that you share with them is confidential. And guess what? If you're not happy with your counselor for any reason, at any time, you can request a new one for no additional charge. There's 3,000 U.S. licensed therapists across all 50 states, available worldwide. And again, there's four ways to communicate with them: text, chat, phone, and video. You can start communicating in under 24 hours. It's available on any desktop, mobile web, Android, and iOS apps. Schedule a video or phone session, generally weekly, unless your therapist schedules more. Unless you just are really not sleeping and need to get some additional chats in. There's broad expertise in the network, which may not be locally available in many areas. Financial aid is available for those who qualify. It's secure, it's convenient, it's professional, and above all, it's affordable. All right. It's truly the most affordable option I've found. So right now, all ALN listeners are going to get 10% off your first month with a discount code About Last Night. So why not get started today and start making some changes for the better in your life? You deserve it. So go to betterhelp.com/aboutlastnight. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor that you'll love. That's betterhelp.com/aboutlastnight. Betterhelp.com/aboutlastnight and get 10% off your first month with promo code About Last Night. And now back to the episode. It's cool to have people like that you work with that do, obviously. I mean, you guys did five seasons? Six?
We did five seasons.
I mean, dude, that's, you know, even, I mean, now especially, but I feel like even then, I mean, it's like, man, I feel like, I mean, you tell me, you've been on more shows, but like three sometimes feels like a win, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, so five is like, I feel like you did it.
Yeah, we did 105 episodes. I think we did 105 episodes of it. And we barely, I mean, it was a struggle to do that because I think there were three heads of programming at NBC during those 5 years. So every time a new head of programming comes in, they want to put their own stamp on the network. So we became the redheaded stepchild early, but we had good enough numbers where they kind of had to keep us. But, you know, the first time we slipped at all, that was it.
Wow. Would you have done, like, do you get to a point with a show like that where you're like, yo, we might go 15 seasons. We might do Simpson records. We might be dude, 35. Like, do you get into a flow of a show like that where you're like, dude, it's running?
I mean, I think five was the sweet spot. Five was good. After that, you just start to phone it in. Again, it would have been a great gig to be able to have that because, you know, that's steady work. And I never discount that. And I never got to the point where I was over it because I've always had this mentality in this business where I appreciate every single job I get because I know what it's like to be digging holes of, you know, in Northern California from gas stations that are soaked with gasoline, you know, these jobs that I had, because I didn't get into this till later. So I knew what the alternative was.
Right.
And so against even to this day, it's like, no, I'm lucky to be working.
What's more difficult, acting with cars or dental school?
Dental school. Acting with cars is fun. Dental school would have been tough. That's why I chose acting with cars.
is there like a school of training for the act, like transform, like how, when you get that gig, first of all, you're probably fucking just, I mean, you call up Khan, he's like, did you jerk off yet? You're like, dude, it's been years later. Those movies are fucking, you know, blockbuster iconic films in time now. And it also the CGI and all that. I don't know if you've done anything like that before where it's, I talked to Chris Pratt once about just Jurassic acting. And he was just like kind of downplaying it and making fun of how he's like, yeah, dude, he's like, they're like, there's a velociraptor. You're like, oh, fuck. You know, and he's like, hey, pretend there's a blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh, man, you know, obviously, I think he was just, you know, trying to take the piss out of it. But it seems easier said than done to truly, you know, make us believe that you're on the receiving end of that stuff.
Yeah, but it's really with the base stuff, it's a lot different when in a Jurassic Park because you don't have explosions going off all around you. In the Bay stuff, with stuff that I did, my stuff was always military. There's a few scenes that I had to do where you had to talk to you. They'd put a post, they'd put like one of those long sticks that you sort of put up, and then they put a picture of Optimus Prime on it. And you'd sit there and you knew the height that he was and you would just talk to him. That part wasn't so hard. I mean, you know, I would imagine anybody who's worked with me would say that it was very similar to working with a stick with a picture of Optimus Prime on it. I don't give a lot back.
Yeah. That's amazing. That was post When in Rome. Yeah.
When in Rome was, yes.
Is there a different mindset for an action blockbuster versus, and obviously I'm assuming the answer is yes, but like rom-coms, I feel like you could have just, I mean, Hugh Granted it up, right? And probably done like two a year and truly just never left that genre. Would you agree?
I mean, maybe, but I also knew that that was a recipe for a quick career.
Okay, so that was a cognizant move to be like, I need to stay.
Like I said before, they're always trying to put you in a box, and I knew that I was getting put in that box, and I was like, okay, I got to switch this up.
Yeah.
And I got lucky, you know, I've been very fortunate to be able to do things like Transformers. That was a lot of fun. I mean, the truth is doing a rom-com is much more difficult than doing Transformers because you have to like deliver a performance, and Transformers, it's not that you don't have to deliver a performance, but it's not, the movie doesn't hinge on whether or not my chemistry works with, you know, the other guys in my, you know, my ops team.
Right.
You know, those are more difficult to do. And I like doing stuff like that. It's fun, but I like doing all kinds of different stuff. And like I said, I just did this movie in Mexico. Did I tell you about the movie in Mexico?
No.
So we were quarantined in this hotel in Mexico, Mexico City. And they rented out the entire place. We had the crew, we had the cast, we had the staff. Nobody could leave. We were all like locked in this place for 4 weeks. They turned the seventh floor into a hospital. So the movie's about this, it's called Blackout. It's about this guy who gets in this car accident at the beginning of the movie. You don't really know what's going on until the movie starts to unfold, but he gets in this car accident right at the beginning, ends up in this hospital bed and doesn't remember anything. He took a shot to the head and doesn't remember shit. And starts to realize that the people that are trying to help him are actually trying to get information out of him, because he starts to realize he was a DEA agent, but he also was working for the mafia, the Mexican mafia, and was doing some pretty dark, dirty, like sideways shit, and doesn't know if he's a good guy, if he's a bad guy. Like, well, who am I?
Yeah.
And he basically tries to fight his way out of this hospital. And that was so much fun to do. I love doing stuff like that too, you know, because it's like, okay, now I'm like, shoot 'em up, hard, actiony,
yeah,
fights, like long fight scenes. Like, that's a whole different world than any kind of romantic comedy thing. But that's fun to be able to switch it up and do that. And it's a challenge to be like, okay, am I any good at this? Can I do it? I've tried it before, and I didn't feel like I was ready. But I did feel like I was ready this time, because I didn't push as hard. I kind of let it come to me, and I just sort of like let it play out rather than try to force the issue.
Yeah. That's getting to, obviously, like, you know, and again, you can attest to this more so, but like getting into the, this business and then having an opportunity to flex different muscles and things that, that you haven't gotten to do before is probably, you know, makes, reinvigorates you for just the whole process, right?
Because yeah, it just reaffirms why I love and why I'm so grateful to get to do this for a living. So I like, okay, to this job, I get to be this guy, and you just kind of lose yourself in that. And I get obsessed with it. I put the whole script up on the wall, and I'm like, okay, this beat here, and you got to be able to keep track of where you're at, because the whole thing happens in one day. And so there's all kinds of, yeah, everyone's different. Some movies happen over a lot of time. Sometimes they happen in a day, and you got to be able to like remember, okay, so we're shooting scene 57. Yesterday we shot 97. Where was I then? And how do I make sure that I get to that spot? Like,
yeah,
mentally and emotionally. So it's a puzzle, but it's part of the fun.
My buddy, real quick, told me, I was just talking to him a little bit ago. He works at Fox, and said you did some NFL pregame. I think, I don't know if it was a sketch or the Thursday night.
It was this last Sunday for the Fox NFL Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. You're a big sports fan, yeah?
Oh yeah.
Who are your teams for everything?
Anything Minnesota. I also like the Lakers and I like the Clippers, and I like the Dodgers, but I'm mostly Minnesota Vikings for sure.
It's tough to not jump on somewhat of a bandwagon in LA if you've been there for a minute, especially because like all the teams are pretty much always competitive, right? So it's like, yeah. And you're going to go to
Clippers.
Yeah, dude. I'm still praying that Ballmer moves him back up to Seattle so I can have a team again. But you know.
Oh, really? You think the Clippers will go up there?
It was talked about at one point because Ballmer was actually tried to help save the Sonics, and that didn't happen. He always wanted a team, and that's why he got the Clippers. It worked out. So there's been rumblings. Bill Simmons is always saying that he should take him up there because L.A. he thinks is just a Lakers town, and that the Clippers, you know, are just, you know. But now they have this new stadium coming, so we'll see.
It's not a terrible idea, to be honest. No. And I hope they go back to the Supersonics. I mean, that's maybe the greatest name in the history of.
Dude, it's the best. I mean, it's like, you know, people ask me, they're like, what's worse, your parents splitting up or the Sonics leaving? I'm like, dude, it's like not even close. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, bring back the Sonics. Like, you know, I cried harder when we lost in 94 to Mutombo and the Nuggets than when my dad was like, I'm moving out. I was like, dude, bye-bye. Sean and Gary are right here. Those are the folks that I need.
They should have a hockey team, too, up there, by the way.
We have one. We have one. Well, it's coming. We just got approved.
Oh, that's right. It's the Kraken.
The Kraken.
The Kraken.
Yeah, dude. And the logo's sick. That's right.
I like that name too. The Kraken.
Oh, you call the fans the Crackheads. You're playing in the crack house. They hit fucking.
Oh, that's amazing. The Kraken.
Tweaker night, you know, like 20,000 fans get little pipes. I don't know. Like there's so many promotional ideas.
So tell me this, why doesn't Wisconsin have a hockey team and Nashville does or Tampa Bay?
Dude.
I mean, don't get me wrong, these teams are good, but there's not a real Wisconsin, that's a hockey state.
Yeah.
It'd be easy. Just call them like the Green Bay Puckers.
Yeah.
Right?
It really writes itself. You're not wrong. I mean, trust me, dude. And I'm sure as a sports fan too, like.
Or the Milwaukee Pucks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the play right there.
I mean.
Would you ever be GM of a sports team? Is there a sport that you feel like you know the most about what's the sport when you watch it for your hometown team? I'm going to assume it's Vikings, where you're probably like, dude, guys, leave the room. I might break the TV or throw a child through the window.
What's the question? If I did what?
There was three questions in there. First of all, what's the sport that you feel like you could actually step into the front office and make some guys, I think we should change the name of from the Green Bay Packers to the Green Bay Puckers. And they're like, what? Josh, nobody said you could be in this meeting. All right, chill. We're drinking, right? Is there a sport that you feel like you could step into the front office? And then second part of that, what's the sport that you watch where you're like, I should probably be by myself during this game because, my behavior is a little out
the
there.
The first part of that is, well, let me answer the second one first, is that I don't get as wound up anymore as I used to because as a Vikings fan, they've learned to break my heart a different way every single year.
Yo, how about that game against my Seahawks?
The Seahawks missed. Break our hearts several. I was at the game in Minnesota when Walsh missed the 24-yarder.
No, you weren't.
I saw the game this year when they did this. I mean, they do it like once a year. That Russell Wilson, man, he is one of those quarterbacks that I absolutely love and despise at the same time because I know that if he's got a chance to win, he's probably going to win it.
Yep.
And there's only a couple guys that do that. And that's Rodgers, that's Brady, that's Russell Wilson. And that's part of the reason why I don't trust our team right now. I don't trust Cousins. I think he's a decent quarterback. I think he's a good dude. I think he's a good, solid backup quarterback for somebody.
Yeah.
I'm having a hard time buying him as like the guy who's going to take us to the championship.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
And to answer the first part of your question, to segue into that, is that if I were going to pick a sport and pick something that I feel like I could do in the front office, it's assess quarterbacks. I have this knack for it. I know when a guy's going to come out of, because I watch him very closely in college, and I just can tell when, like, I'll see a guy and I'll be like, that guy, if he's put in the right situation, could be really good. And I mean, Carson Wentz is one of them. I remember he's having a bad year this year, but the guy's a great, he's also one of those guys, by the way, that if you got 2 minutes left, he's probably going to take you back. And I promise you, he's probably going to take them and win the NFC East this year. As bad of a season as he's having.
Wow.
I do. Great. I think that because he's that guy that knows, I saw him do it all the way through college. I remember when he was a sophomore in college, I was like, this guy is a pro quarterback at NDSU. It's a great football program, but they don't produce pro quarterbacks. And this guy's like legit. And sure enough, his junior year, his senior year, they start talking about it. I was like, I knew it. And then he jumps up and he's like number three. They got another one this year, by the way, North Dakota State, this Trey Lance, who declared for the draft. And he could be another one. He could be another one that could be really great.
Dude, I love how into these guys at that stage you are. Next year, if things are loosened up, you should come down with me. I used to do this sports comedy podcast with Mark Sanchez, and we went down to Jordan Palmer's quarterback camp that he does in the OC with all the young guys. And so it was you know, Josh Allen was down there and Sam Darnold and Joe Burrow and Tua and I stepped in to, you know, to take some comedic, you know, I played sports, but like, hey man, it's been a minute since I've ran some routes and caught fucking darts. And Josh Allen at one point for, you know, I'm out there just like, I caught a couple diving catches at the sidelines from Burrow and from Mark. And then Josh Allen steps up and Mark goes, dude, throw it as hard as you fucking can. And I got a GoPro on. I'll send you this little clip. And so I'm running to the sideline. And dude, this guy put it, first of all, he's a fucking truck, Josh Allen. Throws it so hard, hits me right between the letters, below the camera. Yeah. And just all I had to do was put my hands around it, knock the wind out of me, knock me to the ground. Then I stood up like a jackass and was just like, I'm ready for the league. But I mean, this dude, and then I go, please tell me you threw that as hard as you could. He's like, pretty much, man. He's like, that was like an NFL speed ball. And I was like, catching that if it's not just knocking me into the sternum, you know, abdominal bleeding for sure. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's like special arm talent to be able to play in the NFL. And if you don't have that kind of arm talent, you're not going to last long.
Is this why you put Swartzen in Buddy Games, your directorial and writing debut, which, by the way, looks fucking hilarious. The cast is bonkers. I'm assuming these are all homies, or they just, everybody fucking loves you, love the script. But Kevin Dillon, Olivia Munn, Dax Shepard, Swartzen.
James O'Day, Dan Bacadol.
Bacadol's a G.
Yeah, it was. By the way, we're number one movie in the country right now.
Are you serious?
Ah,
dude, mazel tov, dude. 2020 ain't so bad.
Oh man, it was amazing. So we're watching because you know I knew writing this that the critics were going to come after me because it is hard. It's like it's a no holds barred comedy. I wanted to push the envelope. I wanted this thing to be like my favorite types of movies, which are, you know, Something About Mary, which is Dumb and Dumber, which is anything Todd Phillips or
Dumb and Dumber is my favorite movie of all time. Like comedy or drama. I love
it. Exactly. Me too. So top five for me for sure. Maybe top three.
Yeah.
I love that. I love when they have the balls to go ahead and just like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to show this. And the people are going to go, I can't believe they just went there. And we do that a lot in this movie. And I knew they're going to come after me. So when it came out yesterday, we started the morning at 23 and I watched it throughout the day go from 23 to 17 to 14 to 11. I'm like, we're going to number one. We're going to, you know, like, let's just go up for the top 10, 7, 5, 3. And then by the end of the night, we're at 2. I'm like, oh my God, this is like, cause if I could tell you how much work it's taken to get this movie, it amazes me that anything gets made, first of all. And then the battles that you have to fight for everything just to get it finished and to get it edited and to buy a little extra time to, you know, not trust that's the distributor. We want to go with these guys. And we know we need to go now. This needs to happen in 2020. I don't want to push it out to 2021. It's just like, I've learned so much. I trusted that this movie worked because I've seen it play in theaters and people lose their shit. So I knew that it was funny. And all of a sudden I'm hearing like these, they're bashing my movie that I've worked like 4 years on. I knew they were going to do it, but it hurts. And then to see it go to number one. And I was like, before that, I was like, the people will decide. The people who watch this stuff, they want something like this. These are the kind of movies that people want to see, especially right now. It's about a group of guys who gets together every single year. They haven't done it for 5 years because one of the guys got injured. And, you know, as an effort to pull one of the guys back up, his mom comes to the leader of the group and says, you need to help my son get the boys back together. And it's kind of perfect for now because we can't be together. We can't even have fucking Thanksgiving together.
Yeah.
And we want to be naughty. We want to have some fun. We want to let loose. And that's exactly what this movie does. And sure enough, man, it was such great. I was literally in the car this morning. I can't believe I'm going to admit this to you. I was taking my boy to McDonald's because we wanted McMuffins.
Yeah, dude.
And I get the text in.
I love that, bud. Whose idea was it? Was it a joint?
I don't know, probably mine. But I'm in the car and we're driving. I get the text. I get a picture of the list and it says Buddy Games number one. And I literally started like tearing up.
Yeah, man.
Because it's been 4 years of battling for this thing. And putting everything I have into it and, you know, all the naysayers, all the people, all the trust that I had in it, it was true. The people decide. The people like this movie, and it makes me just so happy, you know?
Dude, I'm so pumped for you, man. And we're watching it, my fiance and I, tonight. So I'm fired up to, you know, I don't know if your people will give me an email or a number so I can, you know, not only text you, you know, pictures and videos of me working out, but also, you know, my thoughts on the film. Because, dude, you laying out, I mean, I already know I'm going to love it just based on what I've seen. And you even just saying the movies, the comedies that influence you, and just even chatting with you and seeing our similar sensibilities, I'm like, yeah, dude. And you mentioned this earlier about being on the receiving end for auditions and stuff and having, you know, the actor's helmet on when you're in the director's chair and for casting and stuff. How much does that truly help for the making of the film? And is it also tough to maybe be, I don't know, giving, you know, comedy direction to Schwartz and Bacandell? Or is it easier because you're like, they know that you are one of them?
Yeah, they know that I'm one of them, and they know that I'm not going to try to tell them how to be funny because that's why I cast them. All I needed to do was each scene. I just wanted each scene to push the story forward. I knew there was something that has to happen in each scene in order for us to make this story work, because there is, you know, it is outrageous and ruckus and extreme as the movie is. It's also got real underlying themes. It's about friendship. It's about camaraderie and brotherhood. And it's about, you know, picking a brother up when he's down. It's about how valuable those friendships become as we get older. And so when I'm doing that, so my whole, and I remember I called Todd Phillips before we started this movie, because we had, our kids went to the same preschool.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he's one of my all time favorite directors. And I was like, I was like a little bit intimidated by the dude because he's so good. But I said, you know what? Fuck it. It's 2 days before we start the movie. I'm almost done with prep. I'm just going to call him and see if he's got any advice that he can impart before we go. And I called him and he answers. And I was like, hey man, it's Josh. He's like, Josh. I was like, Demel from our kids go to school. I was like, oh yeah, Josh, how you doing? He's like, I'm about to shoot this movie. And he's like, first of all, he's like, well, congratulations on that. That is impossible to do. And I told him who's in it. And he's like, well, that's an amazing cast. Those guys are so funny. One thing you got to make sure is don't let them out funny each other. Make sure that you keep it grounded, keep them between the rails, and you'll be good. And that was really what I tried to do. They know how to be funny. I just wanted to make sure that we kept it grounded and it was going to be funny no matter what. And that was, you know, he was so generous to even, you know, pick up the phone.
Yeah,
first
that's
of all.
Huge. Man, 4 years of that. Yeah, you're so right about how tough it is to get things made. So I'm sure, like, you know, in the past few days, you're probably just getting flooded with memories and even moments to where you're like, God, things almost, how tough that day was. Just right, trying to, like, give yourself that extra rewarding feeling of, like, man, got through that tough day. We got through that, and now here we are getting to see the fruits of your labor. Did you...
You learn a lot about yourself when you go through it. You know,
so I was gonna ask,
what I learned was that I was a good sort of problem solver because inevitably, probably in every single scene, something comes up, whether we can't get the location, we don't have the money, we don't have the time, whatever. There's always something. You got to be able to go, okay, so we can't do that. How do we still do the same thing differently? How do we still get the same, you know, result and have to, like, completely reimagine it? And that's one thing that I did throughout, all the way through writing it, rewriting it, casting it, shooting it, editing it. You know, it was just like constant sort of horse trade, you know?
Did you ever get, so you were in the editing bay for a lot of this too, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever, were there?
The whole thing, I edited I didn't edit it, but I was in there with the editor the whole time.
Fuck. Were there, oh, yeah. I mean, was it just a... Did you have the good problem of having too much funny shit and having to chop things down, or?
Yes. Yes and no. I mean, we only had 18 days to shoot it. We had very little money. So we had to, like, shoot this thing quickly. And so one thing I learned about editing is you can do a lot of stuff to sort of move things around to make it work. And you can, you know, it's all about taking a few frames off here and making this, you know, just it, for the comic timing of it, or you can change the way a story is told by the edit a lot. And I didn't know that until I went in there. It also changed the way I act now, because now I know what it's like to be in the editing room. So when I'm an actor, I'm like, oh, this is what they're going to want they're going to want options.
Oh, wow.
And so that, you know, I just learned so much throughout this whole process, and to see it do well, and I think it's going to do well over the weekend.
Oh yeah.
Such perfect a time, man. Whew.
Are you getting, you get hit up from, were most of these people in the film buddies already? Like, did you just straight up send like Olivia or Schwartz in the script and go, will you do this? Or
I knew everybody except Kevin Dillon. I knew I've known Schwartz forever. We're both big Vikings fans, both from the same area. Kind of. I knew Dax through When in Rome back in the day.
Yep.
We've always remained friends. I knew Dan Bacadal because I'd worked with him on a show called Battle Creek. I knew James Roday because he directed me on Battle Creek. And I knew Olivia just because I actually knew her because she was dating a guy in Vegas back in the day. And we just remained friends. So I just called a lot of favors. I needed guys that would come and lay it down because I couldn't pay them. They all worked for scale. I'm hoping now we can pay them because they got a nice back end. And and I just called in as many favors as I could. And they all showed up and they came and laid it down, man.
Dan Bacandell, I was in the heat with him, and that guy is a fucking scene stealer just gets funny, man. And I don't know what he is in the film.
He's from Second City, you know. He's like one of the Second City. So he comes from that improvisational world.
Yeah.
And he's also a gifted actor. He was the hardest act. He was the last guy we cast because you'll see when you see the movie that Shelley is a very specific thing. It has to be a guy who's believable in that he has gone down a dark, dark hole. After you'll see what happens in the beginning of the movie, he goes like down the spiral. He goes from the top to the bottom in over 5 years. But he also had to be fearless. I mean, there's full frontal. There's stuff that he does. Shit. There's stuff that I asked him to do that he doesn't care. Didn't even fucking flinch.
Fearless, man. You got to be for comedy. Well, dude, you're the man. I've been a fan for a long time, man. And it's you're just as cool as I thought you were gonna be. And I'm very pumped for you for this movie, and can't wait to watch it. And your timing couldn't be more perfect because I feel like comedies are. You know, not only in the film world, but like TV, like people need comfort food programming right now. Yeah. And especially during the holidays. Do you mind doing a quick quarantine question thing? And then we'll wrap this up.
Sure.
Some quick, quick, easy softball, get to know you. Is there a reality show right now that you would go on or want to go on pre or post COVID?
Alone.
What's that? It's like Naked Alone? And Afraid.
Oh, you haven't seen Alone?
No.
Oh, God. You got to check it out. It is one of the coolest shows. What they do is they take 10 people and they put them in a really inclement part of the world, whether it's Patagonia or Northern Vancouver Island. Huh?
The store?
No, not the store. Oh. Patagonia in southern South America.
Gotcha.
I think it's southern Argentina. What is it? Peru or Argentina, so I forget what country it's in.
That sounds more interesting.
So they put them in these places and they get to bring 10 things. So they bring like hooks. They don't get to bring a fishing rod, but they get to bring fishing line. They bring hooks. They get to bring paracord, an axe, some like flint starter. And they have to make their own spot to live. They got to find their own food. And whoever lasts the longest wins. And these people are unbelievable. So that would be one. I mean, I don't know if I'd want to actually do it. But it's my favorite reality show for sure.
Dude, that sounds amazing. So it's got a little like Amazing Race meets Naked and Afraid meets not Dog the Bounty Hunter. What's the guy, the bear, the guy in the wild who's out there?
Bear Grylls.
Bear
Grylls. Yeah, it is that, but you got to bear in mind, they don't have any camera crews around. They teach them before they go out there. They set them up with like certain cameras and battery packs to charge them, I guess. Or maybe once a week they come in and restock them, but they're out there by themselves and they have to shoot it all themselves.
Oh, that's even cooler, dude. All right. That's
fucking... normal, dude. Check it. You got to check out a couple episodes. Season 3 is great.
Oh, I'm
locked. Season 1,
dude.
2, 3, and 6.
Gonna roll me a fat blunt and watch probably all seasons in about a 10-hour sitting.
You're going to roll a fat blunt and watch Buddy Games first.
Oh, dude, this is, if you think that wasn't happening. I'm glad you said that, because like I've had people too that I've talked to about things, whether it's on the pod or not, when I'm like, dude, I got so baked and watched this, and they watch your shit, and they're just like, okay, it's not meant for that, but I appreciate it. And I'm just like, oh, we're still totally is, yeah. Okay, great. Okay, great. Emil, if you're stranded on a desert island, a meal that like your not your last meal, but a meal that could get you through, you could have it every day. You just had this one thing, and you know, whatever is, you get the four courses in it, but a plate that you would have to survive on. What's on that plate?
Oh God. What is on the plate?
Yeah.
My mom's meatballs, mashed potatoes, and gravy, which I had last. She made it. She was here watching my boy when I was in Mexico for a week, and she made me a bunch of frozen ones, and I ate two of them last night. So that,
dude, meatballs, literally my favorite food, dude.
Oh God, my moms are the best.
Oh, you lucky bastard!
That's probably what
I do. Yeah, dude, you dip the meatball in the mashed potatoes. It's a home run. Yes, get some greens in there. Yeah, yeah, because there's kids watching. You gotta deliver the healthy answer. Your favorite documentary?
Oh God, there's so many.
One that's recently. I just watched McMillions, the McDonald's game.
That was pretty good. That wouldn't be my favorite, but I would say, right.
Hoop Dreams, Spellbound.
Yeah, well, of course the Jordan one was great. The Jordan documentary was great.
Amazing.
But that Jeffrey Epstein one was pretty messed up. That one made me like feel icky. God, there's so many, and I can't think of which one it would be. Let me think on that.
Yeah, we'll come back to it. Advice for a 38-year-old comedian trying to break into modeling.
Forget about it and do something else. It's a dead end.
Oh, dude. You know what? Dreams created and broken in the same sentence. If you woke up, Josh, and a song would start playing to be the soundtrack for your day, what would it be?
I'm going to go with.
I can give you some choices if you can't think of one.
I'm going to go with something Fogerty.
Nice.
Maybe, what is it? Mystic. Into the Mystic.
Great call, dude. I wrote down weirdest fan message. I thought it for a second. I wrote weirdest fan massage, but so either one, if you want to, what's your weirdest fan massage that you got out of nowhere?
Something to think of. It's like the documentary.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. How about this? More fun: winning a daytime Emmy in 2003 or hosting the Kids' Choice Awards in 2013.
I would say, oh God, they were both pretty special because I got to go up and my mom was there at the Emmy and she couldn't believe it because you know, as a big lifelong soap opera fan for a son to be winning was a big deal. And then, you know, when I did the Kids Choice Awards, Fergie was pregnant with my boy and that was cool. And my sister was there. So, but I'm going to say the Emmy.
Great. And lastly, an actor that you'd like to be in a movie with or direct.
An actor that I'd like to be in a movie with or direct.
Choices like Tom Hanks, Adam Ray, Halle Berry.
Yeah, I mean, Julia God, White. I would say, oh God, I would say somebody like Will Ferrell. He seems like he'd be a lot of fun. I like guys who are just a lot of fun and fearless. You know, he'd be fun to direct.
Yeah.
Or work with.
Well, when I'm auditioning for your next movie, I'll just tell you the story of how I came in hungover to an Olive Garden commercial audition wearing a Reading Rainbow t-shirt and a sport coat and said for my opening dialogue when the guy said, hey, just bullshit before you guys get into the lines. I said, hey, anyone else see Jurassic Park 3? What a bunch of bullshit. And the guy goes, cut. And he's like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm making small talk at an Olive Garden table. He's like, dude, this is not going to happen for you. So if you want to talk fearless. Dude, thanks for making time. I can't wait to watch the movie.
Yeah.
Very pumped for you. Congrats. I'm even Thank cooler you. That you that shared that it's number one, which is big time. And and hope Pretty the awesome. Hope the rest of your quarantine and pandemic I feel like we're, you know, hopefully rounding the corner here soon. So maybe you can come out to the Comedy Store and see a show. We can
I'd love to
get some cocktails at some point.
Sounds good, man.
All right, dude. Thanks again, Josh. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you, Adam.
All right. Peace, player.
Be good.